Well, good morning, LifePoint Church. Good to see you here today. If we haven't met yet, my name is Lee, and I'm the teaching pastor here at LifePoint Plain City, and thrilled to be with you as we are continuing our series, The Good Life. And so as we've been walking through Job's story, we're learning a little something about the good life. Now, when you think of the good life, I imagine for most of you, like I do, I think of life being good, right? The good life means that things are going good in our lives. And so as we've looked at Job's story, though, what we've seen is that the good life doesn't mean that life is always good. And when life stops being good, it doesn't mean that God has stopped being good either. Instead, what we've said each week is, what if the good life demands difficult moments? What if the good life demands difficult moments for us? And so I'm going to get into that here in just a moment as we dig more into Job. We're going to be right in the middle in chapter 28. But before we do, I wanted to highlight for you something we've got happening starting next Sunday. It's our life group kickoff, okay? And so three times a year, we kind of all start back up in our life groups. Our life groups meet in 12-week terms, and then we take a few weeks off, and then we jump right back in. Part of the reason for that is to provide a little bit of rest for our leaders, but also to give everyone an opportunity to jump in. And so, good news, if you are not in a life group, we're all starting them back next Sunday. And so, anyways, if you are not in a group and you would be curious about seeing what life groups are, this little handout is exactly for you. You can open it up, and you can see inside of it is a little bit more of what life groups are. We are going to be walking through the book of James this fall, and we're encouraging our life groups, if they want to follow along with that, they most certainly can do that. And then you can actually scan a QR code that will bring up where and what life groups are meeting. And depending on where you live, if you live in Plain City, you can click Plain City, and groups from Plain City will jump up. If you live in West Jeff or around West Jeff, you can click that. If you live around Hilliard or Dublin or wherever, you can click on life groups there, and you'll see what life groups are meeting and when they are meeting. And so we would love for you, if you are not in one, to check one out this fall. It's going to be an amazing time to connect with the relationships, and we're just excited about what God's doing through that. So I wanted to highlight that for you. If you are not in one of those, we would love to see you step into life group this fall. We have men's groups, women's groups, and we have what we call family life groups, which just means it's men and women, and sometimes there's kids there, okay? So not every family life group has kids, but a lot of them do, and it's a lot of fun to have them be into that. It's a lot of craziness, but it's a lot of fun. So well, let's get back to the good life, okay? So when we think about the good life, right, we think about things that are good. And can I tell you some of the things that frustrate me just in life? Not maybe just generally, but especially in my home, it's around dinner time, and maybe you've had food, and what inevitably happens is, especially for us with our kids, or maybe for you if you've got roommates, right, there is food that is uneaten, okay? And most of the time, it's our kids. They take one bite, you know, it's like they take one bite of food here, and it's like, it's just like they have all this left over. And what do they do? Right? They just walk over and, you know, they take it and they just throw it in the trash. And you're like, don't waste it. Don't waste the food. You know, because you feel like you've got, there's still good use for it. It's valuable. You can still hold on to it. But inevitably they just have a few bites and then it feels like it's just tossed in the trash. Right? And you're saying, you got to hold on to that because we could save that. We could save that for tomorrow, or we can make out with what we would call, right, our leftovers. Right? And so it can be frustrating to see that, because I'm just like, oh, all that food is just down the trash and it's being wasted. I don't know if that bothers anybody else or if that just bothers me, right? But we can feel that way about food, and here's what can actually happen when it comes to some of the trials that we walk through in life, is we can treat it the same way. Here's what I mean, right? You think of the food, and you just eat what you want, right? You eat the food that you want to have. And then whether you don't like it or whether you're full or whatever, you just want to discard and get rid of the rest. And I think we take suffering in the same way. That whenever we get challenges in life, whenever maybe there's financial struggles or there's relationship issues or there's problems at work or there's tension with your kids, and we just feel like whatever's kind of we're walking through, we just like, I just want to get rid of it. Right? I just want to throw it away. Like there's, it's we can waste it because there's nothing good that can come from that. There's no value in those things. And what we're going to see in Job's story today is he's going to help us to see that there is actual value in that. That actually, God doesn't really want us to waste our suffering, right? He wants to do something, that there are lessons that we can learn. That it's not just food to be discarded, right? Don't waste your suffering is really where we're going today. And so when you look at the things that are challenging in your life, losses, diagnoses, challenges, hardships, things that you look at and you say, I don't want that in my life. Now, you may have not wanted it in your life. I know there are things that I've gone through and have walked through that I wouldn't have said, hey, sign me up. I want to go through that. But also, if you speak to people who have walked through some really hard things in their life, that I would imagine there are some things that they learned about God, about their faith, that they wouldn't have learned had they not gone through that. And so we're going to move to this point in Job where he's going to begin to help us to see how we shouldn't view our suffering as something just to discard and get rid of. Not something that we should waste, but actually something we can learn in that. So what we're going to see is that there's lessons that we can learn. One is that we can look for wisdom. Second, we're going to see that we can actually begin to live with conviction in our lives. And then lastly, that we can learn some things about God in those things. And so if you got a Bible, open up to Job chapter 28. We'll have the verses on the screen. Like as the video said, there's a QR code on the seat back in front of you. We can tap that and you can kind of see the message notes and follow along and take notes and email those to yourselves. Or you can definitely fill out the connection card. We're always grateful that you do that because it does make an impact in people's lives. But just to give you a little bit of an idea where we're at in Job, okay, whether this is your first time or you're just catching up with us, a lot has happened in 28 chapters, okay? And so we meet a man named Job in the beginning. And the Bible tells us that he is an upright man. He's righteous, which means, think of that word right, that he is in a right relationship with God, and he's actually living rightly before God. Like he's living a right kind of life. He's living a morally upright life. He is a hard worker. He loves his family, and he loves God. He actually turns away from things that are evil, the Bible tells us. So if evil is happening over here, Job's like, nope, I don't have any time for that, right? I'm hanging out over here with these people doing these kinds of things. And he's wanting to lead his family to love Jesus, to love the Lord. So it's like somebody that's doing daily devotions, right? They're reading their Bibles, they're showing up to church, he's serving, like all of these things, Job is trying to help lead his family to a deeper relationship with God. And then we see that there's this man, Satan, who enters into the equation, right? He's really an angel, right? But he's demonic. And what Satan wants to do is his name literally means the accuser. He's the accuser, which means Satan loves to accuse you and me of lies. All he does is lie. And so he's looking for people to have an influence on, people's lives to destroy. And then we see God saying, hey, have you considered Job my servant? In essence, Satan comes up with this rationale. The only reason Job loves you, God, is because you bless him, because you're good to him. You see, God, if you stop being good to Job, guess what? He's going to curse you. He is going to reject you. He's going to hate you. And Job's like, let's find out. Not because God's like, man, Satan's got a point. I don't know. Maybe that is why Job loves me. God's not surprised. He knows why Job's heart. He knows his heart. He sees it. But I think what God is wanting to do is he's wanting to help, I think, show Job. But he's also, I think, wanting to show you and me of what genuine faith looks like. You see, we can be tempted to believe that the reason we come to church, the reason we read our Bibles, the reason we love and worship God is so that he will bless us. Is so he will do good for us. And so you will have a blessed life. Now, I'll tell you, the Bible tells us that you follow the Lord and walk in obedience, you will be blessed. But you see, what we end up turning that relationship into something that's transactional. See, God, I will love you if you do this for me. It's in the same way you go and buy something store. Hey, I will give you this if you give me this. You see, when we're looking and saying, God, I'm going to love you as long as you bless me, that has stopped being a relationship and it's turned it into a transaction. And you see, I think what Job is trying to show us is the reason why we love God is not so we can get things from him. It's so that we just get God. We get a relationship with the creator of the universe who loves you and me. And so in the midst of that, right, Job is walking through all these hard things in his life. He loses his children, they die. He loses all of his wealth and loses all of his business. And his body is now covered in sores. And his wife comes to him and says, just curse God and die. Like that's how bad it's gotten, right? Like his spouse is saying, just curse God and die, right? It's not good. And then Job has friends show up. And the friends show up trying to encourage Job by telling him, hey, you know what? I know God is just, and God only punishes evil and only blesses good. Since you are experiencing evil and punishment, Job, that means you have done wrong. You have sinned. You deserve this, or your kids deserve this. And Job is like, that's not true. Like I know what I've been doing. You can't like look into my life and say, oh, see, you've done, this is why that's happening. You see, the friends were starting to reduce God, something that is so complex, God and life, into something he's trying to make it so simple. And they took kind of the prevailing narrative of that day and age, right? That if you do good, good things happen to you. If you do bad, bad things happen to you. But you and I both know that's not true, right? You and I know that even if you try to do good, bad things still happen to you. Bad things still happen in the world. That you know that there are people who do bad, who do evil, who choose to do sin on purpose, and it feels like they get blessed, that life goes well for them. It's not as simple as that. And so that's what Job is trying to help them to see, is it's not that simple, not that easy. So they've been back and forth. And then right here in chapter 28, we're going to be to see this kind of transition moment, because here in a few chapters, God, who has been silent throughout all of this, is finally going to speak. We're going to hear from God. But in that moment, we're going to kind of help us to get prepared for that response. And so that's where right here in chapter 28, we're going to see why you and I, we need to look for wisdom. Because when we're suffering and we're going through things that are hard, we don't often just need more information. We just need to know what's the right thing to do with that information. So let's look at chapter 28 in Job, and let's see this looking for wisdom. And what we're going to see here is how humanity can seem to find hidden treasures here on earth, but they can't find wisdom here on earth. Look with me in verse 9. Man puts his hand to the flinty rock, overturns mountains by the roots. Listen as I'm reading this to kind of the ingenuity and creativity of man. He cuts out channels in the rocks, and his eye sees every precious thing. That makes me think of Minecraft. If you play, like, think of mining in and uncovering, seeing all the things there, it's like, that's what's happening. And that's where they got the inspiration from Minecraft, was Job. Probably not. Verse 11, he dams up the streams so that they do not trickle. And the thing that is hidden, he brings out to light. Verse 12, but where shall wisdom be found? Where is the place of understanding? You see, the author here is helping us to see that man can do incredible things. Incredible things. Like, this is more of a primitive culture, right? They're not driving around with bulldozers. With all the equipment that you see when you're driving around here, it feels like every intersection's got construction. There's cones everywhere. You're seeing houses going up left. Like, the ingenuity that we have today nowhere compares to the ingenuity that was happening then. And yet, the author here is showing that even human beings in this time are finding ways to dig through rock, channeling tunnels into the earth. And what they're finding are these precious metals. They're finding hidden treasures. They're unearthing the things that were covered through here. And he's saying, look, humanity can find all kinds of amazing things here on earth, but there's one thing mankind can't find. They can't find wisdom. Wisdom can't be bought. It can't be found here on earth. He's saying that the answers that you and I are looking for aren't going to be found in this world. It's not sufficient enough. So as we look for discernment, as we look for answers in this world or look for direction, what the author is trying to say, if you're looking for the things of this world to try to help you to discern what you should do next, you're going to be left empty-handed because the world cannot give you that. It's like if you're asking a question about what you should do in this situation, one of the most common things we do is we Google it. Right, you type it in on Google, go to ChatGPT, you go to Gemini, you go to some AI source, and the incredible thing that's happening now is we're seeing more and more study of young people, young adults, teenagers, that they're finding companionship and friendship with AI, with a robot, that they're just talking with it and asking questions about life and what to do, and it's providing answers in there. It's incredible and instantaneous in that kind of way. And so more and more of that's happening, and people are asking, what do I do? How do I handle this? How should I handle this person at work? How do I send this email? What kind of tech? Like, you can ask it anything. You can Google it. We're inundated with reels and TikToks about things that we should do and how we should view the world and how we should live our lives and how we should raise our kids and how we should, all the things. We are not lacking information. There's plenty of information. But what we are lacking is wisdom. Wisdom on really, how do we apply this? What do we do with this? something that an AI chatbot just can't quite give us. Something that a TikTok reel that doesn't know your situation and maybe is limited in perspective can't quite speak to. You see, what Job 28 is going to help us to begin to see is wisdom can't be found here on earth, but here's where it can be found. It's going to show us that wisdom isn't just what you and I know, but it's who we know. Look with me in verse 23. God understands the way to it. Again, this is all about wisdom. He's saying God knows the way to wisdom. He knows its place. He looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens. And he said to man in verse 28, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. To turn away from evil is understanding. He's saying, listen, you and I, we're looking for something on this earth and we can't find it, but there is someone who sees it all. Who's not limited in perspective, who's not limited in experience, who's not limited in the time and place in which he lives. There is someone who sees it all, and it's God. You see, I think it was yesterday, our kids were outside playing, and they were playing with our neighbors, and they're playing with one of those bounce rockets, right? You go out there, and you like, you know, you jump on it, it shoots up in the air. Like, those things are a blast. Well, our neighbors had it, so our kids felt like they needed to jump in on it, right? And they're having all kinds of fun with it, shooting the rockets everywhere. Well, the bad thing about that is they're shooting rockets into the woods. And so, and guess what? When they shoot rockets into the woods, they can't find them. And so, sure enough, they come in like, oh, they didn't want to play anymore. They can't find the rockets. And I'm like, what? And then my wife is really frustrated because she's like, you can't just leave them. You need to go find it. Lee, go help them find it. And I'm like, I'm watching my Bobcats beat the Mountaineers. Come on, like this, I can't leave. All right, happy wife, happy life, right? So I go out and we're looking for these rockets. I'm trying to find, it's a green rocket surrounded by green. And I'm just like, where? And we're looking and it's been 10 minutes or so and I can't find it anywhere. The kids can't find it. Now they're done looking. They're playing on the playground over there. And I'm just like, we're not done yet, guys. Then sure enough, there's the rocket laying next to the tree here. And I'm like, how do we miss that? And it just makes me think of, like, I couldn't see it, I couldn't find it. But here's what it is with God. God's never like, where's the wisdom to be found here? Man, what should they do in this situation? I've never encountered that before. What? I don't have any direction for them. I don't know what to sell them. I don't know how to guide them. No, God sees it, knows it. He's not limited in those perspectives. He knows exactly where it is. Like if God were looking for that rocket, he would say, hey, it's right by the tree. Like, he knows exactly. He sees it all. And so how that helps you and me is when we're trying to navigate what should we do, how should we do things, how should we do relationships, how should we do marriage, how should we do finances, how should I view my work and vocation, how do I think about friendships, how do I think about the purpose and point of my life, he's saying don't look to the world. Don't do things the world does it because the world didn't design it the way I designed it. You see, wisdom is learning how to live in God's world, God's way. Wisdom is living in God's world, God's way. But here's what we want to do. We want to live in God's world, my way. If we're honest, right? Because God's way is restrictive, it feels. God's way is limiting. God's way delays gratification oftentimes. God's way has us saying no to things, and the world says yes. There's nothing wrong with that. But because God says, hey, this is how I made it. This is how life works best. Trust me. That's living wisely in this world. It's coming to us and saying, I don't know what to do, God. I have plenty of information here. I just don't know what to do with it. You see, many of us, we're very familiar with this book. You may have spent a lot of time reading it, studying it, being in Bible studies about it. You see, you're in my problem. The longer you walk with Jesus is you don't lack information, but a lot of us lack wisdom on how to apply it and what to do with it. And for some of you, you just haven't spent enough time in this yet. That may be running into situations and you don't know what the word says about it. And so if I could just give a real practical tip, the book of Proverbs is an excellent source of wisdom in our lives. I mentioned last week that in the Bible, there's certain genres in it. And so genre is just what style was this written in? like in the Gospels, in the New Testament, the Gospel of John, the Gospel of Matthew, it's more narrative. It's recording things that actually happened. And then you get like Romans and 1 Corinthians. These are letters that were written. There's an intended audience, right, to the church at, from so-and-so, and there's things that he's addressing. And then you get to things in the Old Testament, even the New Testament, that are wisdom in nature, which means sometimes there's short, pithy sayings. There's things that are more like, hey, in this situation, here's what you should do. There are more principles, less imperatives. What I mean by that is less of, hey, you must do this or you're in sin, or more of like, hey, and generally, this is if you do it this way, it'll go well, right? Raise your kids in the instruction of the Lord. Right, and long will be their days, right? It's this idea of like you try to raise your kids to know Jesus more times than not, they will. Does it guarantee they will? No. So it's just kind of wisdom. There's kind of this lower wisdom, which is more practical in everyday life, which is what Proverbs is. And then there's higher wisdom. What's the purpose and meaning of life? Which kind of Job and Ecclesiastes wrestles with that more. And so reading Proverbs a day can be really, really helpful. There's 31 chapters in Proverbs. There's usually 30 or 31 days in a month. Just pick, what's today's date? Man, it's the 7th. Read Proverbs 7. Tomorrow, read Proverbs 8. Just read it and take that, do that for a year, and just see the kind of wisdom you learn as you start to understand the world and how do we live in it God's way. So learning to live in God's world, God's way, begins by fearing the Lord. Proverbs 1:7 even says this, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. That idea of fearing God isn't go to God and be afraid of him. Oh, Lord, I'm scared. Like, that's not what fearing God means. It means fearing God is having this healthy reverence and honor and respect to him. Right? It's this idea that I know how powerful God is. I know the authority that God, like God spoke the universe into existence. Like, I can't even tell my kids to do something and they do it, right? Like, I don't have that kind of power and authority. Right? God is eternal. I'm aging. My body reminds me of that every day, right? Like I'm limited in my perspective. God is not. And so it's recognizing that God is so distinct and other than me. And yet I want to have a healthy dose of I want to honor him and reverence him. One of the things that I love about the military is you kind of see this practically. When there's somebody that is a higher ranking official or command, like there's just this automatic respect, right? Standing at attention, saluting. Like there's a sense of recognizing, hey, I recognize and see the rank and authority you have is over me. I'm going to show you respect and honor that. You see that in coaching relationships, right? You want to listen and honor and respect your coach. You see, there's something beautiful about that. And when we look to God and say, God, I want to listen to you because you have some things to teach me, rather than, God, I know, like, I know some things. I've read some things online. I've seen some reels. I've had some conversations. I've learned a few things myself. I think I can figure this one out. You see, that's what he says fools do. They despise it. They reject God. But wise people say, Lord, I want to understand. Help me understand. And that's getting in his book. And that's getting with his people. And say, man, I'm going through this situation. Well, how would God direct me to do here? What would be the right and wise thing to do? Rather than what do I want to do? What makes me feel good? What do I like? That's not the question that we're asking with wisdom. So that's looking for wisdom. Let's look at the second thing we're going to learn here is that we need to learn how to live with conviction. And now we're going to see a new person enter the story here. It's a man named Elihu. We don't know. We haven't heard of Elihu. He hasn't been one of the friends. But here in this moment, right, we're at this transition period in Job where all of these conversations with Job and his friends have been back and forth. And then there's going to be a person, Elihu, who we're kind of being led to believe here is seen it. He's kind of heard it. He's been in earshot. He's observed it. But now he's ready to say something. Now he's ready to enter into the equation. And so we're going to meet a young man here who's burning with passion and conviction. That's really what struck me in this. So watch this. Notice as I'm reading this where it talks about Elihu burning with anger. Like he's being moved from the insides with situations here. Verse 1. So these three men ceased to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Elihu sees that now the friends, they're silent. They have nothing else to say to Job. because they've seen Job as like, look, I'm not being a sinner. I'm not living immorally. My life hasn't deserved this kind of punishment and suffering. And they're like, I don't have anything else to say. Then Elihu, the son of Barachel, you just kind of go through these sometimes, right? The Buzite of the family of Ram, and he burned with anger. And listen, it says he burned with anger at Job because he justified himself rather than God. You see, Elihu is burning because he's saying, Job is standing before God and saying, look how innocent I am. I don't deserve this, God. You're wrong. You're wrong for treating me this way. And Elihu is going to see, we got to be careful when we start accusing God of doing wrong. Verse 3, he burned with anger also at Job's three friends because they had found no answer. Although they had declared Job to be in the wrong. Verse 4, now Elihu had waited to speak to Job because they were older than he. And when Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of these three men, again, he burned with anger four times. That's shown up there. But what that's telling me is, Elihu's been standing off on the side and he's seeing what's going on and he's saying, I can't help but stay silent anymore. I got to speak. I've seen these injustices. I'm seeing things go wrong and I got to do something about it. I can't sit back quietly anymore. He's saying, Job, you were wrong for accusing God of doing wrong. Job's three friends, guys, you were wrong because you were making false accusations against him. Now, one of the things about Elihu is he's actually a little bit bold in some of his things. He's not all right either. He makes some assumptions and exaggerations. So again, just because you are burning with passion and excitement and conviction doesn't mean everything you say is always right. But what I love about this, and I think one of the things that we learn from this, the reason that repetition is there, is that, man, I think it's a valuable thing for you and I to have things in this life that we have a burden for. Things that we see that we can't sit back and just sit on the sidelines. Things that we say, I want to get in the game. These holy disregard for things that are going on in the world. This righteous indignation that's welling up inside him. And to think about, do you have something burning inside of you that you're passionate about? A wrong in this world, something that bothers you, that you say, I want to do something about that. I remember for me, when I began to see this starting in me, was I didn't grow up going to church. So I didn't grow up learning the Bible. I know what it's like to walk into a church and not having a clue what's happening. What are we singing about? What's he talking about? Why are people standing? Why are people kneeling? Why are we bowing? Like, why is there a lot of blood talk? Like, what's going on in here? Right? Like, I understand in those spaces, like, what's kind of going on. I know what it's like to walk into a place where you don't know anybody. And you're like, do they know I don't know any? Like, I don't know anybody. I know what it's like to feel like you walk in somewhere and nobody wants to get to know you at all. And so that just began because of some of the things that I've seen. That began to kind of show some things inside of me that I'm not okay with. That things that bother me. That things that I feel uncomfortable with that I want to do something about. I remember playing football at Ohio University and seeing around me all of my teammates, seeing other student athletes, and just seeing the challenges and temptations that they had. The temptation to go and party, the temptation to go find fulfillment in relationships, the temptation to feel like, man, if I could just make enough money or get enough famous or if I could finally play or if I could start or I could be this or whatever it may be, just seeing all of this stuff that they're looking for satisfaction in this world and knowing I have pursued the same things and found those to be empty. Because I had experienced that, there is now this sense of saying, I want to help show them that there's a solution to this. That I don't want them to go through all of this looking for life in all the wrong places when I have it right here in Jesus. That when I met Jesus, he transformed my life. That I had purpose. I had satisfaction. I had something that was like a cure to a disease that they all had, and I wanted them to have it. And also, I care deeply about people walking into this building for the very first time. That we have a smile on our face, that we are excited that you are here, that we don't expect you to have it all together because I know you don't, because I don't have it all together. And yet we're so glad you're here. You are welcome here. We want you here. We want to know you. We want to know your story. We want to know your life. All of it. Because when I experienced that, it changed everything in me. You see, I want you to begin to have some things inside of you that excite you, that you're passionate about, that you want to do something about in this world. Because I think that's one of the things that I learned here in this, is that we need passion for something that's bigger than ourselves. We need to live for something bigger than us. See, passion is born out of burden. But if our passion just stops with the things that are around our little world, we're missing the bigger story. You see, Elihu burned with conviction because God's honor was at stake. And conviction lifts our eyes off of ourselves, and it directs it towards something greater and bigger than us, toward God's truth and his glory, making God known and not us. Burning and living with conviction. Lastly, here's what Elihu begins to show us in the next few chapters, is that there are some things that we can learn about God. Elihu wants us to learn some important lessons when it comes to God. So over the next few chapters, he highlights some of those. So I'm just going to run over those just for a moment. The first thing Elihu shows us is that God is a teacher. God is a teacher. He wants to teach us some things. Maybe you're a teacher. You know what it's like to be in the classroom. And there's a hope of, I want to communicate some things to these students. I want them to learn something. Maybe you've had great teachers that were great at helping you understand and simplifying things and helping you to discover wonderful truths. God is a great teacher. Look with me in verse 19 from chapter 33. A person may be disciplined on his bed with pain and constant distress in his bones. You see, where he's going to begin to show us is that suffering can actually be an instrument that God uses to teach us. Think of discipline. It's not that God is saying, you've done wrong, I need to discipline you. But think of disciplining yourself with dieting and exercising. It's, hey, there's something I want to grow in and learn in here. Verse 20, so that he detests bread. His soul despises his favorite food. His flesh wastes away to nothing, and his unseen bones stick out. He draws near to the pit and his life to the executioners. He's saying, hey, this sickness that's come upon him, right? He's starving. He feels like death is on the doorstep. But yet in the midst of that suffering, there's something to learn. Verse 23, if there is an angel on his side, one mediator out of 1,000 to tell a person what is right for him. He's saying, what if an angel showed up next to you? What if there was somebody standing between you and God that could help instruct you into something that was right, that was happening in this situation? He's saying, what if there was a lesson that you could learn? Verse 24, they would say this would be gracious to him and say, spare him from going down to the pit. I have found a ransom. That this suffering can actually be, hey, this is something that we can give in exchange for something better. Then his flesh will be healthier than his youth, and he will return to the days of his youthful vigor. He will pray to God. God will delight in him. That person will see his face with a shout of joy, and God will restore his righteousness to him. He's saying, look, God is a teacher who uses suffering and pain and hardships to help us to learn some things that we might not learn had we not gone through those. I think of one of my favorite shows growing up, Boy Meets World, and the great Mr. Feeny. Right, Mr. Feeny was his teacher next door to Corey, and it felt like Mr. Feeny had lessons to share over and over. Every episode, right, it's like Feeny's got some words of wisdom to pass on to Corey about a situation. Or maybe you're a Full House fan, and it's Danny Tanner sitting down with DJ on his lap, telling the lesson of what they can learn from that. And I just think God is a great teacher who uses even the hard things in this world to help us to learn some things about ourselves, about God, and about others that we would not may have learned had we not gone through that. The second thing Elihu wants us to see is that God is just. Chapter 34, verse 10, therefore, listen to me, you men of understanding. It is impossible for God to do wrong. God cannot do wrong. He cannot commit evil. It is outside of his character. God always acts in line with his character. and for the Almighty to act unjustly. For he repays a person according to his deeds. He gives him what his conduct deserves. Indeed, it is true that God does not act wickedly and the Almighty does not pervert justice. Listen, he's saying, I know it may look like that people get away with evil or that you're suffering wrongly for something. He's saying, in the end, God is always just. God always does what is right. Even when it looks like there's no hope for this, God is working it out. He's saying the cross is a beautiful display of that. Because it's at the cross where it feels like Satan is standing there feeling like he won. Jesus died. Evil prevailed. God knows, hey, 3 days later, he's walking out of there. Evil doesn't win. Disciples, they can trust that even when it feels like they don't know what's going on, God has a plan that he's working and that we can trust his justice, that he will do what is right. And then lastly is that God is omnipotent. Just a big fancy word that just means God is all powerful. God has the power to do anything. There's nothing that God's saying, I need to rest a little bit more. I need to get a little more bench press, do a little bit more deadlift. I gotta live a little bit longer. Right, I gotta eat a little bit. I gotta be able to get more. I gotta learn from someone else something I don't quite know yet to have the power to do something, or I need to go and ask somebody else. No, God has all the power to do whatever he wants to. Look, he says this in verse 23. The Almighty, we cannot find him. He is great. He is great in power. Justice and abundant righteousness he will not violate. Therefore, men fear him. He does not regard any who are wise in their own conceit or kind of their own heart, their own belief. He's saying, listen, God is great in power. He has the power to act and to do whatever he would want. And so don't think of God's inactivity as God's inability. That God can't act and isn't acting because he doesn't have the power to do so. No, God does. But somehow he also has a plan that he's working that we just have to trust in. Because why this is really important is the lessons you and I learn, it shapes the life that we live. The lessons we learn shapes the life that we live. I remember when I was back in sixth grade, great time. We should all go back to sixth grade. I'm just kidding. None of us want to go back to sixth grade. Sixth graders, I'm sorry. Right? It's a hard time. And I remember I had a crush on a girl. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to ask her out. Her name's Amy. And I remember I wanted to go to Amy and I wanted to ask her out. And I get the nerves and I go up and she tells me no. She rejects me, right? We've all maybe, I don't know, maybe you haven't, or anyways, but I was feeling rejected in that moment. And I learned something in that. Pretty profound, right? That one of the things that I learned is, man, there's something about me that I'm unlovable and there's something about me that I'm not good enough. These are the lessons, right? A great sixth grader learns in that. But here's what I said, here's what I resolved, is you know what? I've got to figure out a way that people will love me and that I'm going to be good enough. And so that drove me, right, for the next 6, 8, 10, 12 years, or really the future of my life was, how can I be good enough? How can I be a good enough athlete, a good enough student? Right, what can I do to make somebody love me? Who do I have to become for somebody to love me? Right, because those, the lessons we learn shapes the life that you and I live. And then I met Jesus in college, and he taught me a lesson I'll never forget, that I'm never going to be good enough, that the best life I can try to live is still not good enough because I've got a sin past, I have sin in front of me, and even the good I still do is honestly maybe not for him, it's a little bit for me too, but that's okay. He knows I'm not good enough. That's why he sent Jesus, who was and is good enough, that his life lived is perfect on my behalf, that I don't have to try to be good enough. I just have to believe that Jesus was good enough for me and that I don't have to try to find a way to get God to love me because he already does perfectly in Jesus. God demonstrates his own love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That God didn't say, Lee, as soon as you clean your life up, as soon as you stop sleeping around, as soon as you start going to church, as soon as you start reading your Bible, as soon as you start doing all of these things, then I'm going to love you. No, he says, Lee, even while you were a mess, even while you were in your sin, I sent Jesus to die for you. Because knowing that his sacrifice, his suffering for you, would actually start to change you and how you live. The lesson I learned that day is that in Christ, I'm perfectly accepted by God. I don't have to try to impress anybody else. And secondly, that I'm loved, not because of what I do, but because of what Christ has done. You see, the lessons we learn, it shapes the life that we live. And so just as we finish up here, right, we talked about looking for wisdom, living with conviction, and learning some things about God. If we go back to our food, really what we want to do with that leftover food is we want to save it, right? I'm a beautiful barbecue chicken in here. I can't wait to eat it for lunch here. But right, you don't want to just throw it away and disregard it because there's still value in it. There's still something that we can take from it. Still something that it can nourish us with. There's still value in what's left over. You see, rather than looking at your suffering and my suffering as something we just need to get rid of, we can look at it as something that we can still go to and God can teach us some things from it. That the suffering, even though it may look like it doesn't have value today, tomorrow, it just might provide exactly what we need. So don't waste your suffering. Use it and see it as an opportunity for God to do something in you and through you that is greater than what you can see right now, but is better for our future than we could ever imagine. Would you bow your heads and pray with me? God, as we just wrap up and think about, Lord, what we could potentially learn, as we think about, God, what you can teach us in our suffering, is that, God, suffering is something that we can learn from, that it has value in it. It's crazy to even say that suffering has value in it. It's not pleasant in the moment. It's not pleasant at the time. Nowhere close to that. But God, I can be reminded that Jesus didn't waste his suffering for me. He didn't waste his suffering for us. That God, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, so that God, we could be forgiven. So that we could have our sins remembered no more, so that our lives could be transformed from the inside out. And so God, whatever we're walking through, whatever we're dealing with, whatever we just say, I just want this to be over. God, would you try to teach us some things about us? Could we find some wisdom in that? God, could we maybe even begin to see there are some things that we're walking through that might be able to stir within us something that we can be passionate about moving forward? And that maybe, God, you're teaching us some lessons about you that we need to learn. Whatever it is, God, may we not waste our suffering because Jesus didn't waste his. And it's because of that hope we have in Christ we can live with joy, because the same God that taught Job is the same God that we sing to today. We pray all of these things in Jesus' name. Amen.